is the part where I watch for the delay, video delay to kick in.
Just starting it off.
Yep. Well, cool. All right. We got 40 on YouTube and we got how many on 22 on Twitch. Hey, I see you live. Awesome.
We deal. We're not
Hooray.
live.
All right. Well, yeah, welcome. So I'm John Galloway. This is Taylor Mullen.
Hello.
So, hey, so Taylor, you're on the ASP.NET team and your specific focus is you do a lot of stuff, but
I
what's your
do, yeah. Given how small the ASP.NET team is, we all kind of do a lot of stuff. We all wear many hats. Me specifically, these days I'm a dev, senior dev on the Razor team, and I work on tooling, I work on runtime, I work on everything there is to know about Razor. I also do a whole lot of things with other products, but my focus is really Razor, which I know about.
Okay. So it looks like my video is not coming through, and also people are saying the audio is low. Oh, look at that.
What's that?
How's that?
Oh, hey.
Hello
Hello.
there. Yeah,
Perfect.
hooray. Cool. Okay, awesome. So people are saying that the audio is low, so maybe we can bug Cameron.
Let's see. Is this bad? Is it for me or is it for you? Or it's probably for me. I'm kind of just have this big mic here that I'm talking to.
Yeah, that mic you do have to get pretty
All
close
right.
to.
All right. I'm
So.
gonna get uncomfortably close to it. Now let's see what happens. Holy. You know, it's
All
falling.
right.
Is that
Keep
better? Is that better?
talking to us, people. How's that
Hey,
audio
people, is this
sounding?
good? Sounding a little better? I can't see
All
that,
right.
so.
Maybe we can. Okay, so people say just Taylor. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah, it's just your audio is low.
I don't know if I can
So.
get much closer to the mic than I currently am without actually holding it in my hand.
Cool. Let me see. I will try and ping Cameron.
Because for me, when you hear me talking, is it coming through okay?
Yeah, but it is on the quiet side.
Okay. I can just talk like this, very,
Yeah,
very close,
honestly, the
repeatedly.
closer you get to
Yeah,
the mic.
I might get a little crank in the neck, looking down at my computer there, but it is something I could do.
Okay, cool. Let's go in while we're looking at that. I will jump into sharing my community stand-up links for the week.
All right, gonna go
And
here.
cool. All right. So hooray, let me go through here. I will share my screen and boom. All right, cool. So keep letting us know on the audio and we'll take a look at that. So here we go. Andrew Locke, here he's talking about validating phone numbers using Twilio in the ASP.NET Core Identity and Razor Pages. So the deal here is that there is some basic validation for phone numbers, just regular expression style. Twilio offers some more advanced phone validation, and including some things like if you provide them a country, they will tell you whether that phone number is valid for that country. So this is not actually like, making a phone call or doing any, specific validation that the phone actually, is there or receives a text, but it's doing kind of a best guess. So what's cool here is he digs into showing actually customizing the identity pages. And the way that identity changed with 2.1, it moved over to using Razor class libraries. So before you had just a bunch of files on disk, and now with the Razor class libraries, when you scaffold identity, it only puts in the files that you are actually, that you want to customize on disk, and is pulling the rest from a Razor class library. So he goes through and pulls uses the .NET CLI to scaffold identity pages. And shows going in and actually customizing specific pages. So this is all that you get to start with. You'll see here this identity area only has the view start, and it's pulling from the Razor class library. Since he wants to go in and customize how it's operating. Here he's pulling in some additional. So that's a cool feature with Razor class libraries.
That's a really cool one we added and worked a long time doing too. It's really nice to see you doing this. Wow.
I think, yeah. And I wish more people knew about this. Like this is a really cool cool feature, and you know, to be able to ship UI, customizable UI, but only like you don't have to put all those files on disk. It's only if you want to override them. I love the way that it's implemented there.
Oh, yeah.
So cool. So here he shows going in and setting it up with the Twilio API. He's using a country dropdown, so he's showing with a few different countries. So I believe here he shows, you know, three different countries, and then going through and validating. So calling into the Twilio API and saying whether or not the phone number looks valid for that country. So, you know, this is kind of a nice start on it. If you wanted to go through and validate for more countries or whatever, you could. This is also neat just to show off customizing with Razor class libraries also. NOP Commerce 4.20 beta is released. So this is a cool commerce package for ASP.NET. And some of the cool features that they've got support for now is running in Linux and Docker. So some neat stuff. This is a cool project that's been around for a while, has a great community and stuff. So great to see that moving ahead. All right, I just saw this come in this morning. This is Vue.NET Alpha. And so Vue is a popular front-end library. And so what they've set up here is a library for building integration with ASP.NET Core on the back end and Vue on the front end. And so, you know, this goes through and explains the idea. This is actually you're writing your application code in C#. Describing the difference between this and Blazor, that you're actually you're not using WebAssembly, you're just shipping some JavaScript to the client side. So you know, just kind of nice explaining what's going on here, and definitely calling out, you know, the tiny file size on the front end. So this has a little walkthrough of getting this set up, and you'll see your Vue.NET component here. This the application code is in C#. So showing, you know, setting that up and so interesting project. I'll be keeping an eye on that.
That looks like some of the bootstrapping stuff with Razor as well. Nice.
Yeah.
Yep. I see a Vue application there. That looks like these are utilizing components from Trio or Tag Helpers from Tutu. I'd imagine it's Tag Helpers, but I like it.
Honestly, I don't know. That's actually, let's look at that because he does show initializing it. There it is. Add tag helper.
There it is. Yep.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I love it when, you know, people are making use of the extensibility points and, you know, not writing a ton of stuff, not overwriting everything, just kind of plugging in at the right level.
This actually reminds me a lot of when Steve showed his first little iterations on Blazor, and he was doing a lot of similar things where he was having tag helpers as like to make things really bootstrappable and easy to use out of the box, and it looks like that's what they're doing here too.
Okay, so I am getting, Taylor, I don't know if you can wave in while I'm doing these. I don't know if you can wave in Cameron. People are saying that the audio is really, really low.
Oh, no. Okay, I'll wave in Cameron. I'll be right back.
Okay. So folks that are watching, can you hear me? Because I can keep going through these links if you can hear me while we fix Taylor's audio. But if you can't hear me either, then we may just need to wait until that's fixed. So let me know on chat as soon as possible if you can hear me enough to keep going.
All right, so I'm back. Cameron is here with me.
Okay, so people can hear me enough to keep going, and so Taylor, it's just you that's very quiet.
Okay, so I'm supposedly very, very quiet, and I'm, as you can see, maybe 3 inches away from the mic, so...
Okay, so people say they hear me loud and clear. Yeah, people are saying both better now.
Oh, both are better now. Okay, so is this okay?
Okay, people are saying way better. Let us know now if this is not cool. People are saying you're better now, Taylor.
I'm better. Okay.
Wonderful.
Okay, I guess that works. Magic.
Okay, yep. Thanks for all the feedback, folks.
Yep.
Okay, cool. All right, let's keep moving on with these links then.
Yeah.
This is really cool. Dodi has these tons of samples using ASP.NET Core. So these are just tons of samples that he keeps up to date. And these are latest ones updated now through ASP.NET Core 3.0 Preview 4. So yeah, this is great. And so the kind of level he goes through on these, like for instance, here's, you know, routing, showing razor page, showing, you know, just all kinds of stuff. So for instance, I'm just clicking into one here, and these are very kind of targeted, very simple. So if you want to see a specific demonstration of you know, one tiny feature, one example, this is a great way to see that. So, and I love how he keeps these updated. He's always kind of going through and updating them very quickly as soon as a new release comes out.
Honestly, the more community interactions we have with new features for ASP.NET Core, the better. We are so swamped with so many things to do, and this is awesome to see people actually doing this and making samples for the community to use.
Cool, cool. Yeah, and he's been doing these going back for a few years now. So, really, really cool resource. Cool. Shahed updating his weekly series. This is the we're doing A through Z, and we're up to the letter Q already. So this is looking at query tags for ASP.NET Core web apps. So this is a new feature in Entity Framework 2.2, and what this allows you to do is to associate a link query with a SQL query. Oh. So as he points out here, this is something where it can be kind of difficult to debug. You know, why is an abstraction over, you know, data access, sometimes that abstraction makes it difficult to figure out what's going on. And so here you can actually associate, you can say, hey, when I'm calling this or when I'm doing this link query, this is actually the underlying, the underlying SQL. So here his example shows this dot tag with. And then as you go through, you know, here he's showing the results of the query, but more importantly, as you go into your SQL logs, you can see here that it's actually adding comments to your SQL. So just a nice little utility feature, but this makes it possible where you can kind of trace through and you can add this, you know, and they're just comments in your SQL. So it's not affecting anything else there other than being able to diagnose and analyze what's going on.
Yeah, sure, it's not ideal, but it reminds me a lot of like kind of printf debugging in a way where you're trying to figure out how something's working. You get
you're right. Nice
little comments to assist you. That's sweet.
Yep, and it's one of those things where when you need it, you really need it. And so it's cool to see that. Cool. This is one I'm kind of tooting our own horn here. This is .NET Foundation. This morning we just welcomed in .vvm. So the .vvm project has been around for almost 5 years. It's a cool MVVM framework. It supports both ASP.NET Core and OWEN. Going back for these 5 years, they've been building out both of those support levels. And so the idea is it's MVVM style. You can see here there's it's in a way it feels similar a bit to the Blazor model. What's interesting with this is, as they point out recently, last July they announced .vvm adapters for ASP.NET Web Forms, and so when I was talking at MVP Summit, I was talking to Tomas about this, and this allows people. There are several like financial companies and different companies he was talking about that have significant Web Forms investment. And just rewriting the whole thing all at once is not a practical approach. And so what they've seen customers doing, and users doing, is actually using the Web Forms adapters to add in, you know, so that they'll kind of change over their front end support to use .vvm. And then once they've done that, then they can flop over to ASP.NET Core backend. So it kind of provides an abstraction and a way for modernizing incrementally. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes.
And welcome to the foundation. And my last link to share for this week. So ZD is writing about the actual release of the SignalR, the Azure SignalR service. So this is something I believe a year ago they talked about the preview, and so this is actually the 1.0 release, talking about the different things you can do, support for .NET 4.6.1. Talking about features that are supported, not supported, and kind of next steps.
This is actually a massive deal. So when I first joined Microsoft, I was actually on the SignalR team for ASP.NET.
And that's right. Yeah.
When we went to .NET Core, it was almost a rewrite of SignalR. There's so many things that change, and so actually being able to add that support to the SignalR service is a massive undertaking. That is fantastic.
Cool. All right, that is it for me, and I am excited to see what you've got to share. So, cool. Back over to you.
All right. Let's see. Is that the right button? That is not the right button. Okay. That's my box. Okay, cool. Today, as I said, I do a lot of stuff with Razor and with tooling. And when you think of, say, ASP.NET Core tooling, you can think of working in Visual Studio where you get all this beautiful IntelliSense and this beautiful coloring for, like, say, all this yellow goodness, or whether it be C-sharp completion, or whether it be going down to the command line and, like, .NET running and being able to run your applications. These are all things that we consider tooling. And for me in particular, I work specifically on Razor, but Razor has a lot of aspects to it. And some of those aspects are, hey, running it. So it's like if I run it, of course, you now can hit that website. There's a lot of code going on behind the scenes, though, that make this possible. Like, if you've ever looked at the output of a Razor page, you can start to see some little hints of, like, Razorification. So an example here is, see these little indentations of these script tags? This is an indication that, hey, Razor has done stuff a little bit differently. And in this case, there's no script tags in our index page, but there are in our layout. And so if I go over here, we can see some of the indentation differences to kind of say, oh, something happened and Razor has parsed our file and generated it a certain way. So so in this talk today, or I guess in the stand-up, I was really looking to kind of dive into what it takes to make tooling like this, but in particular, what it takes to make Razor tooling, because that is really near and dear to my heart. So I have a few slides, lots of demos, and honestly, probably will not get through everything, but we'll see. And so I always love to start, like, a Razor tooling talk with this slide because I love just memes in general. But anyhow, so Razor tooling, the general agenda, I think I just kind of described that, is we're going to go through what it means to build tooling like this and some of the concerns that we have when building tooling like this. So if we talk about support today, there's a newcomer to this list, which is VS Code, which we'll get into today. We support Visual Studio, which means, when I say support Visual Studio, it means being able to get this nice little colored yellowness in the editor. It means being able to have C-sharp completion. It means being able to have HTML completion, tag helpers, or even go as far as saying having JavaScript, where it's like you can do alert. I always tell people that Razor is one of the most complex languages that we own because it's actually five languages in one, kind of working seamlessly amongst each other. In our case, we have JavaScript, HTML, CSS, C#, and of course, Razor, where Razor is all this good yellow text here. And Razor is very complex because it tries to make all of those languages kind of work seamlessly together. We also have support for VS Code. So if I jump over to VS Code, we have, like, the same little things where if we can go ahead and get C# completion, we have tag helper completion, we have HTML, we have JavaScript, all the various things that you would expect of a nice editor. Now, when building out, I'm not going to show VS or Mac because I don't actually have a Mac on me today, but trust me, it works a lot like VS Windows, and I've put a ton of time in actually making it work as consistently as possible. So when building out support for tooling, you obviously want to share as much code as humanly possible. So the first thing I want to talk about is compiler and tooling layering. When I say compiler, I'm talking about the bits that parse your Razor file and generate the C# to run your page. So what I'm saying is the things that translate this index.html into this page. That is at the compiler layer. Tooling is what happens when I'm actually typing in Visual Studio, because you can't have one without the other. So in compiler tooling, first off, Razer actually has a parser, and this is available on Nougat.org as Microsoft ASP.NET Core Razer.language. It's a super minimal set of dependencies, and we have seen people use this for everything from generating email templates to actually in VS or Mac, they use it to generate their templates to actually generate C# files, which we don't entirely support, but they make it work. I like to say it's a mostly general templating language, but it understands C# and HTML going in and out better than any other language, because that's what we built it for.
Okay.
And then, of course, this has a highly extensible IR phase, and it's kind of interesting. Blazor probably would not be in existence, at least it wouldn't be on Razer, if it wasn't for this highly extensible IR phase, IR meaning intermediate representation. They went ahead and, Steve went ahead and took Razer and said, oh, how can I change this to generate something that can work in the browser on WebAssembly? And so he took our intermediate representation phase and made it spit out compatible code that could work.
Can you explain? I'm not sure I caught that, and maybe someone else didn't either. What do you mean by intermediate representation phase?
So usually in a parser, there's multiple steps to understanding a file. So there's the syntactic understanding of the file where it goes ahead and it parses it and saying, okay, well, this at symbol obviously has a specific meaning to Razer. It has a syntactic understanding. A tag has a syntactic understanding as well. We know this is HTML. If you put stuff after this at symbol, well, it's probably C#. However, we have some reserved keywords that make them what we call these directives. So that's the syntactic phase of a parser. At that point, you can't just say, okay, from that syntactic understanding, let me just go ahead and generate C# that is the result of a Razer file. So you then translate that syntactic understanding into an intermediate phase, is what their intermediate representation. So this is things saying that, well, there's a class, and then that class has a method, and we're trying to render HTML at this location. So we translate syntactic understanding into actual understanding, where this means go ahead and render the HTML element div with attributes, go ahead and render its content, go ahead and render C#, all the various things that it mean that you can't get just from syntactic understanding. So maybe I'll dive into this in a little bit, actually, some more too, to hopefully kind of aid in the clarity with that. And by the way, is the mic going okay? Is this working out all right for people?
Yeah, it's I'll let you know if people say no, but last I heard, people were happy.
Okay, because I'm definitely leaning to the left here to try and make sure I'm as close as humanly possible. So to actually kind of aid in showing what this parser is, I said it's on Nougat.org. So of course I made a sample for it. So I have a little parser here where if we take that parser from Nougat.org and we new it up essentially, we have a project engine. And this project engine is the core of all things Razer. Razer is has a lot of inputs that are determined in order to parse a Razer file successfully. These can be things like tag helpers. They can be view imports. Basically, files impact each other in a way. So we have a project engine to represent that. The project engine pulls information from the file system. We have a specific file system. And in this case, I am just saying, instead of the bin debug net core app directory, just go ahead and use my project directory. We have a file here, and we're going to go ahead and parse this file. So we have a p tag. The time is at datetime.now. So what does that look like when Razer parses it? So if I run this, I get this nice little console output where it's a whole bunch of C#. So as you notice, we are generating a namespace. We're generating some pragma disables because, mind you, this is all auto-generated. However, like if we go down a little further, we can see that here's what I'm saying is we're translating the syntactic understanding of HTML into let's go ahead and render this to the browser. So all Razer is when you translate it from a document that we see here, what this is really saying is render this to the browser, execute this, and render it to the browser, then render this to the browser, right? So that is what this all translates into, where we're saying, okay, write literal, render this directly to the browser, run the C# and take the return value of it and render that to the browser. And of course, we're saying, by the way, this exists in another file. It's kind of an interesting way how C# allows you to do that. And the thing I really want to point out is this class actually doesn't compile. As you notice, we are having an override here, but there's no base type. So at its core, the parser is meant to generate C-sharp and kind of be semi-general purpose, but you need to customize it. You need to extend what it's able to do in order to make something compile validly. Because this is, and in the end, this is just a string. Like if we go ahead and we look at the output of this parser real quickly, we have the C-sharp document, and the C-sharp document has generated code, which is just a string. It is nothing more than a string. We wait for other parts of the system to go ahead and compile that string into something more C-sharp-y. This output also has things like source mappings. So do you remember when we saw that write datetime.now? A source mapping would say, by the way, that datetime.now actually belongs in another file. It's from another file. And so this is what we're telling. This is how we can tell tooling to say, when you end up showing this datetime.now, this isn't just like plain text. This is actually C-sharp and back associated. So we do things like that. Okay. So that is the parser layer. Next layer, we added a feature in .NET Core 2.0 that required us to understand more about your project and specifically the C-sharp in it. So tag helpers. Tag helpers were added where anything that implemented the iTagHelper interface, we would then pick up and convert into an HTMLified representation. So we added a Roslyn integration layer. This depends on Roslyn's Microsoft.codeanalysis.c-sharp bits. And it's, again, also available on NuGet.org. And just like the other one, I went ahead and wrote a little sample here to show what that looks like. So let's look at this. We have a tag helper. And this is a time tag helper. Tag helper merge that says, let's bind to the time tag. So whenever we see the time tag in a document, we're going to go ahead and run this code at runtime. And if I look at our file, this is now saying, add all tag helpers from MyAssembly. And let's go ahead and have a tag helper called time. Now, mind you, there is no tag helper completion until since coloring in console apps. So this does not actually look like tag helperified like all the other projects do. This is a limitation, but we can make it so it parses it as one. So over here, if we go back to our program.cs, there's a little bit more here. A lot of it's the same, but we're now starting to extend our project engine to understand more. So this is kind of hinting at how, what Steve had to do to enable Blazor and what we do actually to enable different flavors of MVC. So we're enabling our person to understand how to create a compilation, a Roslyn compilation. We're telling it which references to use when creating that Roslyn compilation. And then more importantly, when we find something that looks like a tag helper, how to convert it into information that the parser understands. And with all these features, if we go ahead and run it, we get a little more output this time. Actually, it's a lot of more output if we see here, where we still don't have our validly compiling class because there is no base type. We still have our override method, but we are now generating a whole bunch of tag helper related information. Things that are required to run tag helpers. So if I scroll down, we see the time is, it's starting the time tag. It knows that it was self-closing. If it's able to let me scroll to the right here, let's see. Oh, there it is. Self-closing, knows that it was self-closing. We create the instance of the tag helper, and then we run it. So running it is equivalent to invoking that process method and basically creating a set of output that is then rendered to the browser, which we can do here. So I think the point that I'm trying to say is that this layer is responsible for adding the understanding of tag helpers onto Razor and making it so other systems that care about that can use it. So for instance, components, Razor components, Blazor components, whatever you want to call them, they are built on top of the tag helper system, but they generate code a little bit differently than say tag helpers do because they do different things.
It's interesting to look under the hood here and see like a few little lines of C-sharp or Razor turn into quite a bit more. And I think it's easy to forget that as we're, you know, writing away at the application layer, how much is actually happening behind the scenes to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wish there was a simple thing to say, oh, by the way, just go ahead and create this tag and magically make it do what it can do without zero other efforts and this be a one-liner. But yeah, there's a lot there. Like, for instance, if I were to have added attributes, you'd see a whole bunch of things here that were setting up all the attributes in between these two lines before actually running it so that tag helpers could see the attributes that were available on it to make runtime-based decisions. So Next, we have the MVC, or Blazor layer, as I like to call it. And again, on NuGet.org, Microsoft ASP.NET Core.MVC.Razor extensions. And this customizes the parser further to enable things like MVC and Blazor. This is what Steve did. And I go back over here. I have one more demo for this. And I now have a parser with MVC. So we're back to our original file in this example.
So up until this point, you've written code generation that mixes C# and HTML, but it doesn't have more advanced like MVC support, things like model binding and stuff, right?
So model binding is a runtime concern. This is more, so for instance, when I am in this file, if I were to do @URL, we have a URL helper, right? Things that we have access to in here. So this is adding MVC understandings. It's adding things like the model directive. So I think, I'm curious if this will even work. Let's see. I do, yeah. Like the model directive, page directive, all the various things that are MVC-isms. Okay. Not to mention making it so it compiles correctly. Yeah. So if I go over to the program.cs, a lot of the same stuff. But we now have this helper method, razor extension.register. And if I go ahead and I actually go to this, I have the output of what this actually does. So as you can see, it's adding things like the inject, the model, the namespace directive. We're adding some of our tag helperisms that we have. This is just a helper method to add everything MVC related to the world. Blazor had its own implementation of this. And actually in 3.0, Blazor and MVC 3.0 are kind of combined, and we use other mechanisms to differentiate what a Blazor component file is versus a non-component file. So this makes things more MVC-like. So now if I run this, we get a lot more code. Let's do this guy. All right, so a lot more code. Now, as you see here, we are actually starting to inherit from the Razor page dynamic base type. We are now in a compilable state, assuming we have MVC referenced. So if I scroll down, we have the time is, date time.now, a lot more extra bits here surrounding it that are runtime concerns. But how it is showing @URL and @HTML, we can see here that it adds those properties to the type. So when you're typing in Visual Studio or when you are running your application, you have access to those members to be able to use them.
You mentioned the, like, as you're typing in Visual Studio, that's running at this level when it's actually doing things like IntelliSense?
Yeah, absolutely. So every single keystroke that I type, it is reparsing. It is essentially, imagine it running this main application over and over and over again to get the generated output. And it's updating that C# behind the scenes. I'll actually go into in a little bit of how Visual Studio functions and to see how that works. We'll even debug Visual Studio a bit. To see how it all kind of comes together. But yeah, it's cool. Running parts, parsing it repeatedly and then getting information out of it to give a good experience. So obviously that is a requirement for tooling to use, because if tooling didn't actually parse the file, it could never generate the correct C# to give you a good experience. Mm-hmm. So this yellow stuff here is the compiler. And then we have specific flavors of MVC, Blazor. So 1x, 2x, MVC latest, which I said is also supports Blazor. And we go ahead and put each one of these tops on top of the compiler in order to run different versions of MVC. So for instance, I have a 1.0 app in this project. And in this 1.0 app, if I were to say, try typing @page, there's no @page directive. Mm-hmm. Because it's 1.0. Razor pages were added in 2.1. Or 2.0, I believe. I think 2.0. Someone will probably correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, someone will correct me if I'm wrong. It's been a while. But if I go over here,
right. 2.0. Yeah.
We get Razor pages as available. So Visual Studio has the understanding to differentiate what a 1.0 project is, what a 2.0 project is, what a 3.0 project is. It understands how to do that. And that's not necessarily a simple thing to do, which we can dive into how it actually does that in a bit. But this is why we go ahead, in order to share as much code as humanly possible, we group all these things as a shared base. And then we put these little hats on that customize the parser using that highly extensible IR phase to make it parse and generate code in a 1x, 2x, 3x way.
One thing in passing, the base... class that you said that its overriding is of type dynamic. Jimmy pulled that out, you noticed that in the chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does that affect?
Yeah. So if you've used the model directive, right? This actually controls the base type. So let's do something really ridiculous and say model is datetime. Okay? And let's rerun this ParsimBC here. If I go up to the directive, it's now razor page of datetime. So this is when you say, like, say at model dot, this controls that model dot value or that model dot type, essentially. So in this case, model would be of type datetime. I think in Razor Pages it's a little different, where it's actually the class itself, but that's the gist. So the dynamic is there by default if you do not have a model directive. Otherwise, this is how it works.
Cool.
All right, so let's continue. Undo this real quick. Okay, so we next get into tooling concerns. So with all those different layers, we need to be able to interpret each one of the compiler's features differently based off the platform. So we try and share as much code as humanly possible. Roslyn actually has something called workspaces. And a workspace is something that is a logical collection of all your projects and all the documents. So imagine you had a POCO object, which had a solution. And then it had a list of projects, in this case, 5 projects. And then each one of those projects had a list of documents, and maybe it had program.cs. Tooling typically does things like have these, what I call project systems, in a way. Workspace is a little different, but anyhow, project system-like concepts in order to organize where things are and how to interact with them. So for instance, if I open program.cs, Roslyn can ask their workspace, well, find me the abstraction that represents program.cs, get me the parse tree for it, or parse it on demand, and start making decisions based off the output of that. So for instance, we have like Codelens, we have we have like F12 support. Like if I were to do F12, Roslyn takes care of understanding all the various things that are in a workspace, the references, the other types. So you can do features like this. So we need to integrate with that as well. We depend on that. And this layer is actually dependent on by VS Code. VS Code understands this amount of Roslyn. Next, we have all the Visual Studio platforms that we support. And that is Visual Studio Windows, Visual Studio Mac. They depend on a Visual Studio platform agnostic layer. So it's a lot of data types. So DTOs galore, that you could imagine. And basically, it enables us to tie into the editor in a way that is platform agnostic, so we don't have to rewrite the code. Granted,
So that's, I'm guessing that's where things like LiveShare would hook in?
So actually you could put LiveShare in this grouping here as well. Yeah, okay. LiveShare depends on this VS agnostic layer in order to do that. Currently, LiveShare is not supported in Visual Studio Mac, but if it were, we would be in really good shape because our LiveShare understanding would depend on that.
Cool.
All right, so I mentioned Roslyn workspaces, and I mentioned that project systems are a great way how to enable editor features. So Razor actually has a project system, much like how Roslyn understands all the various projects and solutions in the world, Razor has a similar thing. Now, Razor ignores things like the program.cs because it's not a Razor concept, but we do know that there is this parser-only project. We know that there's a file.cshtml available to it. So when we open that file, we can go ahead and ask our project system, by the way, get me the outputs for this file so I can start making good tooling decisions on it, which could be meaning this is C#. Give me the parse output. The parse output says this is C#, so I'll make it so the editor shows that it's C#. Tooling concerns.
Now, question there. The way you loaded that as a file and you pointed to like a folder on disk, how is it the same way when you're loading a Razor class library? Do you point at it kind of the same way? You point at the library, or?
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that. So when you say I pointed at a folder, are you saying that like when I did .NET run versus when I opened it in Visual Studio? Is that what you're saying?
So in your code there where you referenced where the file .cshtml was.
I see.
Yeah, when you're loading from, you know, so when you use a Razor class library, that's loading from a NuGet package, not a file on disk, right?
Correct. Yeah, so it's actually a little bit different because So when you build a Razor class library, it compiles all of your views down into a DLL. Let's actually look here. I believe this is doing it by default. Super off script, but let's do it.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, no, this is good. So do you see this views.dll here? If I were to pop this open and I have ilspy here,
mm-hmm.
Let's actually do this. I can look at all the views that are in this file. So I have my error, my index, my privacy page. So mm-hmm. It compiles all of them down into C# files. And I can, of course, decompile that where I can start seeing some of the results of that generated C# that I was talking about before. And more importantly, if I look at the class type here, is an assembly attribute, I believe. Here we go. So this provides an index into where the page originally was before it was turned into C# and the type of C# that exists. So you don't end up needing to have the exact file association, because with the Razor class library, you're basically saying, if this path is requested or if this path is important, here's the type it associates with.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Hopefully I answered your question there.
Yeah, you did. Great.
So a project system. Yeah. So like I was saying, it is a abstraction that contains information to make decisions easier. I'm noticing I'm running a little bit short on time, so I'm going to speed up and go a little fast here. So just to kind of give a little brief look into Razor's project system. So we have something called a project snapshot manager, which has, again, a list of projects. You can get projects out of it. You can see if certain documents are open. Each one of these projects has their own list of documents. So if I go and look at, say, a project, we have various documents that exist. I can get a document from it, given a file path. More importantly, I have things like tag helpers, how many tag helpers are in the project, what they are, what the C# version of it is. So when C# 8 was introduced, we had to go ahead and say, oh, well, if you're targeting C# 8, then we should make sure things could work in 8 nullability, like the new feature where things are nullable aware. We had to generate different code in order to support that. What the root namespace of the project is, and of course, like what version of Razor. So I showed all the various hats that can go on top of the parser. One of those is 3.0.2.1, so forth. Those are represented by different Razor configurations. And of course, a document that is like represents file.cshtml, where we have things like, is it a component file? Is it a regular file? Where does it exist? What is the project it's associated with? Let me go ahead and get the generated output of it. So this is when I was showing you this generated code from like in the console apps, that's equivalently what this is doing. And then lastly, we need in tooling to be able to understand the various configurations Razor can be, 1x, 2x, and so forth. So we have a list of project engine factories. And each of these factories kind of work on building out a project engine that is extended in a way to support a 1.0 version of MVC or a 2.0 version of MVC.
Okay.
Now, it's a different concern for how our project system knows to use this specific engine, which hopefully we can get to in a bit. But yeah, so that is a lot of a project system's concerns, and specifically our project system's concerns. So design, I thought this would be kind of cool. Let's kind of jump into how things are designed for the project system. I feel very passionate about this side of it because I think we've done a really awesome job designing something that can work across platform. So here we have our Razor, I probably should call this project system, project manager. And this is what we were just showing you, was the project snapshot manager. Now, an IDE over here exists where it could be like Visual Studio, it could be VS Code, it could be many of other different IDEs, VS or Mac. And it has several different concerns in order to populate the information in our project system. Because we can't magically just know what the projects are. We can't magically just know what the Razor files are. We don't magically know what the configuration of the project is or the tag helpers. So we need to populate it with information based off the IDE it's running in. So we have things like, okay, is a document open? Go ahead and tell our project system it's open, or go ahead and tell a document exists. Maybe you have gone ahead and you've restored new references, like you've gone ahead and added a reference to Newtonsoft.json, or you've added a reference to MVC. So we'll tell our project manager, by the way, a project has changed. Its representation, its understanding has changed, because if you changed your version of MVC from 2.0 to 3.0, well, we obviously need to reflect that in our project system so we parse Razor files in the correct way. We mostly do this through MS Build, actually. So MS Build, like if we're looking through the various MS Build of your project and the output of it, we spit out little property groups that say, by the way, this is a 3.0 targeting Razor project, or this is a 2.1 targeting Razor project. Or in the worst case, we say, the DLL that we know happen to know is MVC is version XYZ, use that version of Razor. So we kind of make a best guess. Or Roslyn kind of runs each different IDE, different environment. So there's OmniSharp in VS Code. There is VS for Mac has its own Roslyn implementation, VS Windows as well. And so we have to know maybe something Roslyn specific has happened. So we need to rediscover tag helpers. We need to know what tag helpers are available in the system. Because if you're writing your own tag helper, you want it to be immediately available to you. Otherwise, that kind of sucked because you'd have to sit there and say, oh, let me close and open Visual Studio. Nope, we take care of that for you. So this all gets turned on its head in LiveShare. So let's talk about LiveShare real quick. So LiveShare was one of the things that was added in Visual Studio 2019. And it's a pretty cool idea where you can have a host Visual Studio and a guest Visual Studio. So if we see this LiveShare button up here, if I go ahead and click share, do this. It's going to go ahead and it's going to essentially give me a link that I can share with people in order to join my live share session. So I will open up a page over here. And John, I'm going to actually switch to us real quickly, and then I'm going to send you the link.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So you are sending me over the live share link.
Yep.
All right. Copying this link. Quite exciting.
All right. So I am now sharing my project with John, and let's see if he can go ahead and join our live share session to kind of interact.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. It is saying joining.
Oh, I see you there. I see you just joined. And let's go ahead and if you move around this document a bit, we can kind of see your. Oh, there we go. I'm going to type a little bit. Oh. And so you could do all various things Razor. Now, the interesting thing here is John is actually showing, actually, hold on, let's do this. Do you mind sharing your screen to show?
I don't mind.
All right.
Okay, just a second.
All right. I'm gonna use you as a basis here. So can you open up your Solution Explorer real quick? So we have all the projects that John doesn't actually have on his box. And to prove this, I want you to right-click the index.cshtml, the actual file thing on top, and do open containing folder. And if you could pull
it. This is neat.
So try going up the folder a little bit. We're going to see there's no projects actually here. So this is some of the magic of LiveShare. There is no project.
Wow.
Yet it knows the page directive is there. It knows the model. Do you want to go ahead and open up the 1.0? The 1.0 app?
1.0 app, sure. This one here?
Yeah, and I will go ahead and do a page. As you can see here, it's not yellow. It knows it's a 1.0 app. But again, there's no project file. There's no information. Right. So it's remoting this over the wire because LiveShare works in a remote way. Hence, you are obviously not in the room with me. You're very far away from where I am currently.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is amazing.
Yeah, so LiveShare. You can get all sorts of things with it, which is pretty cool. And you can do C Sharp. In our case, we've added support for Razor. It's only in Visual Studio Windows, not VS Code. And I went ahead and ended the live share session. Jump back to me here. All right. And so to support this, we utilized the fact that we had a project system and then put it over a network. So the one thing I didn't mention before is there is this changed event here. This changed event says, when something happens to the project system, whether you change the configuration because you're updating MVC to 2.0 to 3.0, go ahead and tell the world, tell the IDE, reparse the world to understand the new version of the document. So what we did is, in a live shared environment, we have a host project system, we have a guest one. I was the host, you were the guest.
Mm-hmm.
And over the network, we go ahead and remote all the project level information. I remoted it to you, so you did not need the project on your end. Because I was telling you over the wire what it was. And if I were to, say, add a reference to something, this changed event would fire and you would then see all your files get updated. So we could have upgraded the 1.0 project to a 2.1 project. and so forth.
This is really cool because it allows, like, for instance, I don't need to, in order to take a look at your code, I don't need to say, okay, what do I need to install? What SDKs do I need? All that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, the live share stuff is super fascinating to me. And when I get into VS Code in a bit, like, highly inspired from some of the stuff that was live share related. So yeah, it's really, really cool technology. All right, so let's talk about how Visual Studio works. So we work off of a thing called projected documents. And again, I like memes. And projected documents, okay, you can see all this, good. Is basically if we take this file in the bottom left, this gets broken down into many sub-documents. I said Razor is 5 different languages. If there was CSS, you'd see that here too. So as we see here, the HTML buffer has the script tag on it. It does not have the alert, because the alert is actually JavaScript. If we had another script tag above this, you would also see that JavaScript in the JavaScript buffer. Because mind you, you can use different JavaScript. You can use JavaScript from other script tags. So we generate a single buffer to contain all the various JavaScript as if you were editing a single JavaScript file. C#, all the C# we just saw, same thing. You have a namespace class, everything that represents the C# of the view data title about it here. And then of course, Razor. All of that gets combined to be brought into a view buffer. It's what you see, it's what we see here. Now this is useful because it enables us to, if you're editing C#, you get to act as if you're editing a C# file. If you're editing HTML, same thing as if you're editing an HTML file. So we use these projections, is what we call them, to make this possible. Now, it has some caveats. So for instance, this at curly brace is a Razor concept. Yet we know to indent the C# as if it was in a C# block, but it's not really a C# block, it's a Razor block. So we do some magic to kind of intermingle all these languages together to make things work. So projected languages. And so when an edit comes in, so this is in Visual Studio, edit, we end up doing a parse on the file. We say, is it significant? So I'll get into what the significant means in just a second. We apply it to the projected document. So if you edited C#, we would update the C# with whatever you edited. And then if it was significant, which I'll get into in a second, maybe we need to re-understand what C# is. So an example of this is if I go back here, if I were to delete this curly brace right here, this other curly brace would instantly become C# because it's no longer an at curly brace of Razor. We might need to re-understand what the projections are. So this gets all thrown on its head when you talk about partial provisional parsing. Razor was designed to have what we call implicit expressions. So at person dot. First name, dot, whatever, where you did not need to be explicit about where an expression starts and where one ends. We try and be smart about it. So in this example, we have the dot here at the end, which is actually HTML. As you see, there's no coloring here. But this one happens to be C#. This is a huge concern for tooling and just in general for parsing, because it means you can parse the same document twice and get different results, which is unfortunate. It's C# because of the fact that you're editing it. So if I were to, so if I jump over to this over here, if I do at date time dot, I have C#. Mm-hmm. However, if I go ahead and I close out my completion list, you can see it is recolored. And if I re-invoke completion, it is now HTML.
Wow.
And now that is there, because who knows if this is what you mean, right? Maybe that is what you mean. Mm-hmm. So we need to be smart enough to be able to handle that. Okay, so
Test to cover all this.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah, it is crazy. So I actually have Razor running, by the way. You can go ahead and do the same thing if you'd like. If you pull down the ASP.NET Core Tooling Repo, I'm not asking you to do this, John. I'm saying for any viewers who want to do exactly what I'm doing today. You can run build.cmd and then open this in Visual Studio. And if you run this Razor extension project, you can run Razor in Visual Studio, which is kind of cool. So I have it running right here. And if I go ahead and turn on some breakpoints, we can kind of see this edit flow in action. So I will just do an angle bracket here. So Visual Studio text buffer changed. So Visual Studio is saying, hey, an edit has come through. We now say, well, we need to go ahead and parse that edit. That parse is what we're saying is rejected because we've now typed an angle bracket. we're saying we now have new HTML that might change the format of the document. So this is like, is it significant or not, is what this is establishing right now. So we've just said, yes, it's significant, it's an angle bracket. At which point—
What does rejected mean?
So rejected is our understanding of reparse the document to recalculate projections. That's what it means.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, when you've reparsed it, does rejected mean it failed parsing or it?
It means that when we tried to what we call partial parse it, which is we tried to think, are we in a situation like date time dot where we don't actually want to reevaluate the world, where it's okay if something is not correct? And we said, no, it's not okay, because if you're doing angle bracket, you might want to have a tag helper. You might want to, you might actually change the hierarchy of the document itself. So in our case, we say, okay, well, let's go ahead and queue a change, which means queue a parse. And then we notify everyone listening that the basically results have happened. And if I jump down to here, actually, I can look at the C# for the result in Visual Studio. So if I do, I think it was a code document. That's such big text. Okay, so if I'll do background parser args dot code document, and just like how we're doing in the console app, so if I do get C# document, I get this generated code. And for that document, similarly, I have all of the Razor C# that is being put out to Visual Studio. This fills in the C# projection. So as you see here, we have our JSON, we have our component, we have our URL, all the various things you can access in Visual Studio. So that is a Visual Studio edit flow. Let's talk about VS Code real quickly. So VS Code is based off of a language server protocol model. Now, language server protocols are the new and hot thing. This is how LiveShare works, where they define a set of contracts where it could be completion, hover, go to definition, all these various things. This is actually a very small subset of all the stuff the language server protocol supports. And it allows you to build a standalone executable, a server per se, that can provide responses. So you can ask the server at the following location in document X, what is the completion? And the server will say, oh, the completion is X, Y, and Z. And we'll debug through this real quickly to see what that looks like. So one of the nice things about language server protocols is typically, if you don't have a language server protocol, you end up depending on the platform that you're running on, which is what Visual Studio Windows and Visual Studio Mac and Razor do today. So we say, okay, well, we understand what a text buffer is. That's a Visual Studio concept. So we'll depend on Visual Studio in order to understand text buffer changes. So this is what will typically happen, is you'll depend on each of the various editors in order to do the right thing. However, if you just depend on the protocol, as long as the IDE understands the protocol as well, each language can depend on the protocol, and then each IDE can implement it. And so you kind of get the language features somewhat for free, or at least a lot cheaper. So this is how Razor's VS Code design model actually looks like. So this is a Razor document open in VS Code. We have a Razor extension, which is a TypeScript extension for VS Code. This is a glorified buffer manager. So we use projected documents a lot like in Visual Studio, but we have more control over them. So we'll generate an HTML document and we'll generate a C# document. Each one of those virtual documents has their own language servers that understand everything. The nice thing about this is it means if you install, say, like an Angular extension or React extension for your HTML editor, you get that for free because we are generating actual HTML documents. So you get all of that. We have our own language server up here. And then we have a project system that exists up in this little corner here. I'm sure that's really hard to read. But we have a piece that ties into OmniSharp's language server in order to pull things out, like what version of Razor are you using. And it pumps all that information back up into the Razor's language server in order to parse things the correct way.
Okay.
So an edit flow in Visual Studio Code looks like you get an edit. The Razor extension tells the language server, hey, by the way, an edit happened. Go ahead and update your understanding of the world. At which point it parses the document, notifies that there's new C#. How a completion event might work is you get a completion request. The Razor server says, let's make sure that every single one of our virtual documents are up to date, like the latest and greatest. So when we do a completion, we're not giving bad completions at a bad location. Right. It'll say, what language am I operating on? So for instance, if I do this, if I hit control space here, I get C sharp. If I hit control space here, well, that's also, if I,
oh yeah, yeah.
Huh. Like there, I'm in HTML.
Yeah.
And so forth, right? So it's smart about that. Also various things like, let's see, I get Razor Direct as I'm in a 1.0 app right now. I just realized that. So that's how completion events might happen. So we can actually debug through this to kind of see similarly how VS Code works. So I have VS Code running right now. Let me just full screen this. I'll turn on some breakpoints. And if I go ahead and try and get completion here, which I showed with C sharp before, this is a method that Visual Studio Code is calling into me because it understands the completion language server protocol. So I said, I can help you out with completion. Visual Studio Code is saying, okay, a completion event just happened. What is the answer? So Razor says, well, I don't know what language you're operating in first, so let me go ahead and find out what projection that is. So I then ask our Razor language server, what language am I operating on? I'm either C sharp or HTML at this point. I went ahead and did this little query to say, if it's C sharp, use the C sharp projected document. If it's HTML, use the HTML one.
Right.
And if I look here, this projected document, actually it's virtual C sharp dash Razor. This is our C sharp projected document. And you can actually even see a little bit of the content here. This should look a lot similar to what you're looking like in Visual Studio and in our console app, the C sharp backing it. We synchronize everything so it's in the correct state of the world. And then we go ahead and say, okay, well, now that everything is synchronized, now that we know what language we're operating on, let's go ahead and re-execute completion on the C sharp buffer. So since everything is a request response contract, we can make the same request that VS Code did of us on some other document. So in our case, what we're doing is we're saying, we got a completion request at location, I guess this is line 7, character, whatever that is, character 30, right? So we've gone ahead and remapped that to a different location. So it's line 47, character 75 in the C sharp virtual document.
And the generated, okay, yeah.
And we're saying, what is the completion at that location? So we get the completion and we get a list of, let's see if I can, we get a list of items. So we have last index, class, all these various C sharp things.
Mm-hmm.
At which point we can represent them in Razor at the top level as if we owned it. So in our case, if I turn off these again and I evoke, I get C sharp completion in Razor because it is all request response driven and I can reinvoke it and present it as if it was our own.
Right. Okay. So you're having to kind of map back and forth between these because the actual, like, high level, I think of like, oh, message dot, you know, of course you're completing that, but you're really doing your completion based on the actual generated code when there's more lines of code, a lot more behind the scenes.
Yeah, there. Absolutely.
Wow.
So there's a lot that goes into Razor tooling. a lot. I just scratched the surface. And I probably should have been asking for questions along the way.
Well, so there's a few here. We're short on time. I think this would be great. You know, if we get feedback for more people, definitely like seeing, you know, what's going on under the hood. So as a reminder, when the show ends, there's a link there that, where we say you can request guests, you can request content. So if people would like to see you dig into more detail, I think it'd be great to see more of this.
Yeah.
A few questions. I just have two and we're short on time. So Luke asks, Razor page model validation attributes is still in a needs spec and needs design. Is this in the roadmap? And, you know, do you have any idea on that?
Yeah, so this is something that we know is missing and it has been thought about. Honestly, I'm probably not the right person to ask where it is along the line. That's a little bit above my pay grade. so I honestly can't give you an answer as to if that is something that we're going to do or not, because it's not something I own.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Question from Meher asking, why in Blazor Preview 4, Razor can't parse a Lambda expression called by a method?
A Lambda expression called by a method. I think you'd have to be a little more specific with that.
All right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I realize, yeah. I mean, part the surface area of all that you're touching here is huge, right? You know, yeah. I mean, Razor touches so many things, and so, yeah. I think that we don't have any more questions right now, and I think actually this seems like a good spot to wrap up. And
okay.
Then please let us know. So first of all, how can people keep up with if they want to if they run into questions with Razor tooling, if they want to kind of get more involved, is the best idea to file an issue or is there a Gitter?
So
or
a lot of us are on Twitter. So I am in Taylor Mullen on Twitter. GitHub is obviously a great way to do that. So GitHub ASP.NET, ASP.NET Core Issues. That is a catch-all for tooling and non-tooling concerns. We look at all the issues there. What other ways? If it's Visual Studio specific, there's a great little feedback item, and all those things make their way to us as well. There is a ASP.NET Razor.VSCode GitHub repo actually today. Which also has its own issue tracking. But if you file it in ASP.NET Core, we'll pick it up there as well.
Yeah,
I think every outlet, really, we are listening. I always say that I think that the community undervalues how much influence they have because we take so much feedback, and almost every one of our decisions are driven by what the community says. So they have probably more impact than even I do on a lot of decisions.
I tell people that, you know, they'll say like, hey, John, can you go ask? And I'm like, you know what? If you ask, that's the best way to do it. Like, we file issues in the same place, like throw it up on GitHub and log an issue. And that's the best way to get involved.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, thanks a bunch, Taylor. This was fascinating. We had a lot of good feedback in the chat. People love the deep dive on how things are working. So,
sweet.
Well, yep.
Yeah, hopefully I didn't lose too many people. I definitely should have been asking for questions along the way. I'm sorry.
No. That was fine. That was good. And look forward. We'll get you back in and we'll go over more of this stuff.
Dude, that sounds great.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I think you hit the end stream or something.
Okay. It says end stream. This should be okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Awesome.